Well, very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, I'm here.
Wow. You know, it's funny. This show started out exactly the way last week's disastrous show started out, with us getting locked out of the building again. Thank you, Stony Brook. Thank you for that. Oh, my God. Every single damn time. So we had to struggle to get in and scramble at the last minute. And, of course, there was a few misfires and buttons that weren't hit in the right way because there's so many buttons to hit. And, you know, when you only have a minute to prepare as opposed to 20 minutes, it's a little more frantic. But this time we checked everything and double-checked everything, and there's no errant button that's hit that will make Kyle's voice repeat over itself. And again, people, I don't know how many times I have to apologize for this. Quarter-page ad in the New York Times. There was that TV spot. There were all the flyers that I put out, and plus, you know, just me saying it over and over again on my Twitter feed and bullhorns. I'm sorry for what we did last week. It sounded bad, and it was below our usual standards of sounding bad, which we take pride in. And it won't happen again, at least not like that. It'll happen in a different way, I'm sure, but we won't have a particular situation where only Kyle's microphone is on both in delay and live so that it feeds back upon itself. Some people said it wasn't so bad. Not very many said that, but some people did. Most people said, wow, I can barely listen to you guys in addition to what you're saying. It's difficult. We understand that, and we've taken steps to prevent that from happening again. I can't apologize enough, and I have to apologize to you as well, Kyle, because it was your voice that was distorted and doubled back upon itself.
I accept.
Well, good. All right. The thing is, I did check several times, but when I checked, that was the moment where it wasn't happening. So what's going on with you this week, Kyle? Looks like you're busy on the computer over there.
Yeah, I'm kind of researching a couple things.
Oh, research,
and,
yes.
I don't know, half paying attention to the rest of the world, but, you know, doing all kinds of things. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm ready to talk about it all.
Well, you know,
I watched a bunch of senators today. They're, you know, really extending their well-wishing.
You know, if you
across
want
the aisle.
If you want to get something done, you got to show up with a hole in your head and speak in front of the Senate and get everybody to take your side and express sympathy and all that kind of thing. You know, I feel for John McCain and all that, but my God, this is insane. You have a guy who's battling a serious disease who presumably is not paying for it out of his own pocket, basically voting to start the debate on taking it away from everybody else, because that is what will happen. We're talking something like 30 million people will lose insurance if this ill-fated plan, whichever one you choose, there are so many of them, if this ill-fated plan of the Republicans goes ahead. And I got to say, if that happens, you know, folks, what are you waiting for? I mean, it's like, you know, the red flag is being waved now. We have to stop just sitting back in our easy chairs and watching it all unfold. You have to take action sometimes and keep things from happening. And whether that's occupying your local representative's office, whether that's surrounding the White House, whether it's holding Trump hostage when he comes to Suffolk County on Friday. Yeah, he's coming to Suffolk County on Friday. Did I not mention that? He's coming to the police academy. Okay, so I'll have the police protecting him. Fine, not a problem.
Maybe
you can stay there. Stay in the police academy. Just don't leave.
Maybe they'll detain him.
Actually, you know what? I want him to leave. I don't want him to stay in Suffolk County. That would be bad for Suffolk County.
Yeah, Suffolk County deserves better than that.
Well, anyway, he's coming because of MS-13. Thanks, MS-13.
Oh, this is like a follow-on on Jeff Sessions when he came and spoke about MS. Isn't that right?
I don't think he knows that Jeff Sessions did this.
Yeah.
Because he has it in for Jeff Sessions now.
Yeah, there's like a spat.
Love it how these people, all horrible people, turn on each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know they're really horrible people, because they just keep turning on each other. So, yeah, he doesn't like Sessions anymore. I hope he fires Sessions. I really hope he does, because then Sessions isn't there anymore. You know, I think a lot of people are missing that fact and saying that, you know, it's not fair the way he's treating Jeff Sessions. Yeah, but you know what? Jeff Sessions is a horrible person. A horrible person with horrible ideals and goals. And anything that gets rid of him is a good thing in my eyes. And if that happens to be Trump, then okay, you know, Trump, good for you for doing that. regardless of whatever your reasons might be. Plus, today I heard that Ted Cruz might be his replacement, and the comedy that will come out of that alone will just, it's a much needed relief that we will benefit from.
Yeah, but in seriousness, he's got some interesting positions, and I think he might be more conciliatory to the process and other people's views, but that would be, you know, that would have to be seen. I don't know. Ted Cruz as the America's top cop, right? Is that what that is? Or
I guess so. Attorney General, that would pretty much make you that, right?
And what, you know, how distinct would his priorities be from Sessions' priorities, I wonder.
Well, whoever he picks is going to be a horrible person, whether it's Giuliani, whether it's Ted Cruz. You know, it's not going to be somebody that we're going to be all enthusiastic about. But getting rid of Sessions and basically derailing the whole process a little bit longer, I think, is it's a good thing. You know, I really do. So now what's happening now, though, with the Senate voting to move ahead with the debate on basically taking apart Obamacare,
yes.
Yet again, they're not doing anything else. They're not doing their job. They're not passing any other legislation. They're not debating other issues that are really, really important. They're simply going back over and over and over and over again. And I could go on for a whole half hour saying over and over, and it would still not cover the number of times that they've tried to do this. And basically what they're going to have now is a debate, and fine. You know, a lot of Democrats seem to be upset at this, and they should be, because it's a waste of time, but it's a debate. You can win that debate. You know, you can basically have them go on the record as saying what they are in favor of, as opposed to all this secrecy that we've been dealing with in the past, over the last few months, where they're not even telling you what's in the bill, and people aren't going on the record. Well, now they'll have to go on the record. And all it takes is one more Republican senator, voting against this, and it's dead again, yet again. Boy, this thing has been revived more times than what? One of those horror movie, like, villain type people.
Frankenstein?
I was thinking Frankenstein, yes. I don't know if he actually got revived. I guess that's what happened.
It's technically a revival? I'm not sure. I guess you could put in, like, a revival tour for some soft rock band.
Uh-huh.
Revived more times than the Grateful Dead? No. That's not soft rock. That's psychedelic rock, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know if we want to categorize them exactly.
Yeah, actually, that's probably the first mistake.
Uh-huh.
We're not going to do a music show today, but we'll have experts on maybe that can set us straight on all that. That's what you expect from a community station like WUSB Stony Brook.
Yes, although there is no community station like WUSB in Stony Brook.
No,
we're unique. We're the only ones.
There are music buffs and buffs such as us.
Uh-huh. Buffs all over the place.
Yeah, real buffs.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was incredible.
Sorry.
No, just let. I guess it'll pass. But anyway, to see John McCain just show strength and participate, that was very heartening, I think. And what he was saying is that we need to actually get things done and work together.
Right.
How much hyperbole and rhetoric and you know, what side you fall on that politically, that's, you know, your own thing. But it was definitely interesting moments there, and instructive or apt, considering his condition. Like, he having gone through this terrible medical situation under the context of this subject with healthcare, and this being voted on for discussion today. Very interesting timing. Very a lot of food for thought.
Yeah, I didn't want to imply that I'm not sympathetic. I am very much, but you have to wonder motivations here. What exactly is the plan? What are we hoping to gain from this?
There seems to be a lot of focus on the past too, and recharacterizing what we do have,
but
forgetting how complex the entire topic is when you start considering Medicare, Medicaid, and all the other things.
By the way, Trump just arrived in Youngstown, Ohio. He just sent us a message saying that he has just arrived. in Youngstown, Ohio, with FLOTUS. FLOTUS, of course, being First Lady of the United States. He is POTUS, which is... I'm trying to think of a derogatory word that begins with P. I can think of a few, but nothing I can say over the air. But of the United States, yes. So he's going to be addressing some kind of rally there. What did you think of the Boy Scout rally yesterday? Did you see that?
I actually saw... I heard about it going on. I didn't actually watch any of it. I saw some pictures and stuff. And, you know, it's interesting the use of groups like this. It reminds me of, like... early, like the red, I don't know what or like the Nazi youth or
the Hitler youth. Okay,
yeah.
Well, you know, since you brought that up, yeah, it a little bit, and here's why.
But it was the same thing in China too.
We're not calling the Boy Scouts Nazis, not on that particular level. But when you indoctrinate the youth and make them
a tool,
make them boo your opponents, because he did that. He brought up Obama, he brought up Hillary Clinton. And he just brought up anybody he disagreed with and got the young people to basically cheer him and boo anybody who was opposed to him. That's kind of how you shape impressionable young minds. And when you imply that the Boy Scouts are the ones that are going to, you know, be keeping their eyes open and be vigilant and you know, be on the side of good, which happens to be his side.
Yeah.
That is how you start to create something that's very, very dangerous. You start to create people who will turn on their parents, who will turn on their peers, who will see themselves as, you know, above the law and you know, the chosen people and all that kind of thing, that are in charge of the future of the country. That's not really what the Boy Scouts is all about. It's not that kind of indoctrination is not something that is healthy.
There are so many instances where you have to watch what you say around young people.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's you know, you're in a position of authority as a teacher or some kind of community member, you're constantly you know, whether it's very young people or young adults. And or, you know, individually or in large groups, you really there are so many different topics and things that if you brought up with young people, it would be well, are you trying to get them to sympathize with one position? Are you using your position and their naivete and perhaps lack of experience in understanding a lot of geopolitical and rhetorical positions as a backdrop? You're using them for one thing, but you're also, like you said, indoctrinating and causing more. And we already have a lot of young people that do sympathize, but maybe don't really understand the impact to everybody in society. I mean, this is taking religion out of it. I mean,
right,
it's not
right.
Just that's a whole other attribute to young people that might be susceptible to this. And
I'm glad you brought that up, because think of how religion does indoctrinate young people at an early age in all parts of the world. You know, whether it's the distorted view of Islam that ISIS perpetuates, or any kind of fanatical devotion to a particular religion that is hammered into your head ever since you're a kid in all four corners of the earth.
With this, whatever social issues attached to it.
Right, right. Now, you know, kids don't know to rebel right away against this kind of a thing.
And they're not going to be doing critical thinking in you know, amongst their peers at an age when approval around your peers is very important to you.
Right.
Developmentally.
Right. Imagine
not going to question
the president
that.
Of the United States comes to speak to you. That's something that's going to stay with you for a long, long time. And you're going to think of that as a good thing, as something worth defending. You're not going to know the nuances about, you know, what he's actually saying and what he said in the past and all that. You just know that event that happened yesterday that was the highlight of your life. And think about that. I mean, there were thousands of them. It wasn't just a small troop of Boy Scouts there. It was you know, a whole huge crowd. They got sucked into this.
You're also not thinking about the record. You're not analyzing and looking critically at how this was framed in the context of your service, community service, or whatever projects and things you associate with.
And it's not fair to expect you to do that, you know? It really isn't.
Yeah, it's really putting a lot
on your shoulders representationally. And oddly enough, the Boy Scouts don't really care. They're like, you know, this is a good thing, and we don't care that we're associated with it. It's the president.
The Boy Scouts, you're talking about the management, the people that, you know, sign the papers and all that. The actual Boy Scouts themselves.
Right, as a brand.
They might have different feelings, but again, you know, it's unfair to expect kids to express themselves on that level. Now, you know, it's all cute to go to demonstrations and have a kid holding a picket sign, all that kind of thing. But it's really unfair when you walk up to that kid with a microphone and say, explain the situation, explain the position that you're taking. It's really not, it's not something they should be expected to do. And this is something Trump does not get. In fact, today, this is really, really disturbing. You know, everybody knows. Everybody knows he has a younger son, and you keep the younger son out of it. He's an innocent kid, okay? You know, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, they've both done incredibly stupid things, said incredibly insensitive things. They're not nice people. They are fair game. They are open to all kinds of criticism and ridicule and whatever you can throw at them.
They're adults and they're public figures.
Exactly. But his kid is not. His kid is a kid and should be left alone. And people get that. Reporters get that. You know, most entertainers get that. And the ones who don't are roundly rebuffed. But you know who doesn't get that? You know who doesn't get that? The president himself. Because today, he says in a tweet, Jared Kushner did very well yesterday in proving he did not collude with the Russian witch hunt. Next up, 11-year-old Barron Trump names his own kid, brings him into the spotlight, and basically does everything that the rest of us have made attempts not to do. He doesn't get it himself, and he will put his own kid in the spotlight and sacrifice his childhood for his own petty political purposes.
Yeah, I don't have high hopes for what kind of adult his kid will become if his siblings are any indication.
We'll deal with that when that day comes.
But it's understood.
Right
that
now he's a kid and should be treated like a kid.
At least have a chance to escape.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really silly.
Yeah.
To see him. It's an attempt at sarcasm, which I don't know. I mean, I think people stopped believing that the president was capable of sarcasm. I mean, the whole campaign seemed sarcastic.
Look, you can make the same statement without naming the kid, without giving his age. You know, that's basically, you know, my young son or whatever. You could just say go that far. But when he's actually putting him in the spotlight like that, that's just going over the line.
Right. I bet they'll go after my younger. I don't know. I mean, why am I giving him editorial critiques on his tweets? I don't care. But good for him.
It shows what kind of person he is.
Good for him for throwing low punches in his own fight with the fabled media that's out to get him.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is him. I don't know. Very confusing.
Why are you tying your shoes while we're doing a radio show? You're spending all this time tying your shoes. Which makes it hard for you to talk into the microphone because you're bending over.
You think that's going to throw me off.
I just wonder why that's a priority right now. You were doing
And talking about the president. Yeah.
That's
right.
Not a priority? That's, I think that is all of our priorities.
Yeah, I've got my priorities.
I mean, you know, you should have your shoes tied. Kids, remember that. That is important. But if you're in the safety of a radio studio, you can have your shoes untied. I don't think there's any rule against that.
Okay. Well, I'm more comfortable now.
All right.
So he's bringing his kids into the battle. Well, they're battling for him. They have lawyers on lawyers and all that. And, yeah.
You were doing research. What were you researching?
Oh, it's silly. Well, kind of serious, but silly at the same time. I venture to say that our president is weak on fire.
Weak on fire?
Yeah. He is not making fire again. And basically, there's... How many forest fires do you think are going on? We're in fire season right now.
Wait, well, hold on. How many forest fires...
in the U.S.
Are happening right now at this moment?
Yes.
Gosh. Well, let me think for a second.
Hold on, you gotta get away, get out of the way of that truck.
Yeah. I'm thinking.
Don't move over, the truck is gonna hit you.
Yeah, fine. okay, I'm going to say in the whole United States, what do you consider a fire? I mean, you know, something that is small is what qualifies? I know what a fire is, but you know, something that has a certain minimum number of fire trucks attending to it. I just want to be legally covered here.
I mean, I'm talking about like wildland fires, you know, fires out in remote areas.
Okay.
That are burning, you know, large amounts of land. Put it that way.
Large amounts of land. Okay. In that case, I'll say 50. 50 forest fires are currently burning in this country. That's my guess.
That's a pretty good guess.
Is it? Thank you very much.
It's really not bad. There's currently, let's see, 45.
Wow.
Yep.
I found something I'm good at, guessing the number of forest fires. Boy,
yeah.
Can I get a job doing this?
Maybe.
Well, okay, there's other countries, so, you know, if you're from a different country, I can guess how many forest fires are in your country for a fee.
Right.
All right. All right.
So I'm not going to trash talk anything about fires or firefighters or anything like that, but I will say there's a lot more forest on the western part of this country.
Well, there's a lot more open land in the western part of the country.
Yeah. So, anyway, compared to an urban environment like New York, there's a lot more structural, which is buildings.
Right.
That's called structural firefighting. And what we're talking about in forests are what's called wildland fires. And you hear about this stuff, you see it, you see, like, California's burning, you see, like, what celebrities burning, and we feel bad for them, and then we worry about how much water they have or something. You know, it's like sort of a passing thing, but it's a constant thing.
Right, right.
But people that know realize that it's every year we have a lot of forest fires. Do you know how forest fires start?
I know the concept of fire. How do they start? Each one's different. Some start with lightning. A lot of them start with lightning.
Most of them start with lightning.
Yes, yeah, I know that too. Some with a careless camper leaving something burning. There's that. Bears are responsible for a lot of fires. Bears, no?
Smoky, yes, the smoking kind.
Oh, no, he's fighting fires. Never mind.
Yeah, Smoky actually fights them. Anyway,
how did that get started?
That is a good question.
And Boy Scouts were involved in
Boy
this.
Boy Scouts
too.
Would know.
Yeah.
They would know. But, so, actually, this is kind of similar. So, the Forest Service, so people don't, hold on, we gotta get this truck going. Yeah. All right. People probably don't think about or talk about Forest Service that much.
Right.
But it's like a military for nature. So it's important.
A military for nature.
Yeah,
I kind of like the sound of that.
Well,
it takes up arms against those who try to fight nature.
The funny thing is we don't really have a lot of money, and we don't spend it a lot. I mean, okay, because the Forest Service itself is part of the USDA. It's U.S. Department of Agriculture. So, to that end, these natural occurrences, where there's a lot of them, in fact, 16 of them are in Montana, more than 914,000 acres have burned in 45 large fires in 10 states. In Montana, the Lodgepole Complex burned 25,000 acres yesterday.
Wow.
So they're big. And they have a lot of tools, and the Forest Service is responsible for that. And
uh-huh.
It's a big deal. There's a lot of different units, kind of like that military thing, like different divisions of fire scouts, if we're going to use scout comparisons.
Right.
And they have a lot of tools. So a big part of this is using all of those tools and having them all. And there's this funny thing going on with a really big air tanker that the Forest Service says they don't really have the money for to use to put out these large fires. They use smaller planes that can take like around 5,000 gallons of water, and this jet can take like 19,000. And the Forest Service won't contract with them because it's a little expensive, it's a lot of things, and it's become an issue. And the reason I'm interested in this is because some of the latest events and tragedies for firefighters have been the result of
inadequate assets or technology to help firefighters on the ground. And that's what I mean by being weak on fire. Because this is an important issue. It's something that's happening in a lot of parts of this country. We saw it in Canada when we were driving up there.
Yeah, and they have fires right now, in fact.
In Alaska as well.
Uh-huh.
And we seem to have an unbelievable amount of resources for other things, so long as those other things are involved in war or fighting or can be twisted into defense. This is a defense of a different kind, and it's interesting to see that the country's burning, and we can't seem to pony up for new technologies like very large air tankers. And anyway, so this company that has this large air tanker, they're being very outspoken. They've been in the press the last couple weeks, and I've been following that and looking into just the state of the fire season and what is going on naturally in the world. And I'm curious if the Forest Service will actually contract with this company and advance the kinds of technology. They already use like drones and a lot of other things. Apparently they're considering, after some of the more recent tragedies, the allowance of iPads and other mapping tools, because right now firefighters aren't allowed to use iPads while they're on duty.
And why is that?
It's because they have to be working. I guess they're not allowed to bring in other types of technology to augment the tools that they have.
But that helps them work.
It would help them, and so there's discussions to change common sense things like that. There's another attribute.
How does fighting a fire become so bureaucratic?
Yeah, it's incredibly bureaucratic, and that's the thing.
You put the damn thing out with water.
Well,
it seems simple enough to me.
Yeah, but it's a highly, there's a huge hierarchy, and it is something that uses the incident command system, which is something that has been reapplied to other areas for the military and also events. But basically, that command structure is highly scalable. So it's called the interagency command system, and it allows you to be the commander of a dumpster fire, say if you see an election of some sort and you need to put out that dumpster fire.
Okay, I'm listening.
You're the incident commander. But if it's larger, there are structures that fall into place that allow that system, people from different scout troops, to work together under a common understood hierarchy.
Okay.
And so that's part of, they're used to that bureaucracy, and they're used to working across agencies, even across borders, like with Canada, if say there's a fire that they need support, the Americans will go up there, just like you get with a power outage and stuff like that. But the technology and tools are something that need to be addressed. Extreme fires and extreme weather are becoming more prevalent in our country, and these longer fire seasons are becoming part of that. So things like technology, allowing firefighters to use technology, they're kind of no-brainer things, but they actually haven't been formally addressed within that part of the USDA and the Forest Service. And that Forest Service is a very slow-moving organization to begin with.
Has this gotten worse under Trump than under Obama?
It's very interesting to say. I don't think you could say that. I wouldn't want to politicize it like that much. But I would say that it's glaring as far as naturally occurring disasters go. I mean, this is ongoing stuff. It's been going on for years. It's been getting progressively more intense. And it has a lot to do with land management. It has a lot to do with development. It has a lot to do with weather and our understanding of those things. And I think more tools should be diverted to these kinds of disasters instead of you know, other forms of displacement and the things we are concentrating on. This is our homeland, after all, and it's very interesting to see our own people confront these dangers that are out there with not as much support as you would see for something that is more militaristic or like the police and stuff.
Right.
You know,
right.
We have all this equipment that gets transferred into the police, but there's no real similar thing with firefighting. So there's a lot of interagency cooperation, and they do a lot with the resources they have, but they really need more technology, like other things like tracking, the ability to find firefighters quickly. That was part of what led to the last tragedy. In fact, one of these very large tankers was above a group of 19 firefighters that that burned. They died tragically in a fire almost 4 years ago, or around 4 years ago, and they were making pleas over the radio, and there was actually a tanker overhead looking for them, ready to drop, but they couldn't find them. So there's a lot to it, and it's very heroic stuff. It really a lot of really exposed professional firefighters that really risk it, and you know, risk it to save, you know, urban sprawl and, you know, people's McMansions out in the woods. So it's ongoing and something that I've been very interested in and paying attention to, because we have a lot more technology now with satellites and computers and the kind of capabilities are advancing very, very quickly, but making use of them and getting them to areas of the government that could use it in, I guess, more peaceful ways.
Well, I mean, to me, firemen are true heroes, because, you know, many cops are as well, but I think we focus too much on that and not on the people who, every time they get a call, they're going into something that is definitely life-threatening.
Yeah,
it's not just, you know, oh, is this, you know, a harmless fire? Okay, be on your way. No, fires are deadly. They are always deadly, and every time you go to investigate something like that, you are risking your life, and that's something we don't seem to appreciate enough.
Yes, it's true.
Many people do it for nothing. You know, volunteer firemen, we have them out here.
Yeah,
the siren goes off, everybody runs, and, you know, they battle a fire. They don't know what they're going to be facing.
Yeah, they do a lot more with medical and also
paramedics, too, yes.
Yeah, they are people that show up and are often first responders to medical incidents, but also, as you said, structural fires and that kind of stuff. And we don't realize that when you're exposed like that, when you're out in the wilderness, it can become incredibly intense. A firestorm, a very, very large fire, can have incredibly high heats, and it's also very closely tied to the weather.
Right.
So when weather changes, things move very, very quickly. You can have fires advancing at, you know, like 10 miles an hour, you know, very quickly. So it's ongoing stuff, but really interesting and very important to apply new technology to this stuff and be aware of the impact on in your community.
How can people follow this and keep updated?
Yeah, so the best website is the Interagency Fire Center. That's run out of Boise, but that's where I got a bunch of the facts for today. Talks about the fires that are ongoing.
And what's their URL?
That's nifc.gov.
nifc.gov.
Okay. And there's a lot of groups, community groups and stuff that support wildland firefighting, but there's plenty to support, and it's an entire community that we don't often think about in urban environments, but it's has a big impact in the rural parts of our country, and there's a lot of issues around it.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because it's something that I guarantee people here aren't thinking about, and maybe now people will focus on that a little bit. They really should know what's going on. Thanks for researching that.
Yeah, it was just something I was curious about. Are we going to wait for this train?
Oh, a train is coming. You know what? People have been wondering what's in the background. okay, I guess we might as well tell you. This is as good an opportunity as any. We're actually spying on a town in Kentucky. It's called LaGrange in Kentucky. And we have it up on YouTube, and basically we just have the audio of this intersection the whole show. But what's interesting about this particular town is that there's this train literally that runs down Main Street. Now, it doesn't cross it. It runs down it, and it's coming right now. It's a freight train. You have to look this up. Just look up LaGrange, Kentucky. And especially if you go right now, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. This car is parked on one side of the road. This car is parked on the other side. And in the middle, there's a freight train going down the road. And there's also a crossing, and other cars are waiting to cross that street, but they can't because there's a freight train going by right now.
Those are tank cars, I think.
Those are tank cars, but depending on what time you look at this, you could see all kinds of things.
I'm not sure. That might be a liquid.
Yeah.
I don't think it's gas.
We don't have freight trains around here, so we don't get to experience this. But I just find it amazingly cool that we can have this camera into this strange place in Kentucky where a train rolls down Main Street a bunch of times a day and makes noises like that. I want to go to this place. I want to see what it's like. It's fascinating. But anyway, so that's what you've been listening to. I wasn't even sure a train would go by, and I guess it's fortuitous that it's going by right now. But I wanted to talk about something else that's going on that's kind of annoying me.
Yes.
Because I read this in the paper a couple of days ago. Don't you hate when politicians get involved in things they know absolutely nothing about? And music is one of those things. And activism is another one of those things. Get this. A bunch of politicians in Nassau County have decided that their sworn enemy is former Pink Floyd member Roger Waters. Yeah, they are calling on the operator of the Nassau Coliseum to cancel Roger Waters' concerts scheduled for September because the former Pink Floyd bassist's support for a movement to boycott Israeli goods and services. Wow. That's what it takes. The GOP-controlled... I'm sorry?
What's wrong with that?
The GOP-controlled county legislature this year passed a bill sponsored by legislator Howard Coppell prohibiting companies from doing business with the county if they boycotted or divested from Israeli businesses or supported sanctions against Israel. Wow. But they're going a step beyond that now. They're saying that if you speak out against Israel and if you support what is known as the BDS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, that you are also an enemy, and because Nassau Coliseum gets funds from the government, i.e. gets funds from us, the people, that is enough for them to say, yeah, Roger Waters, and this is literally what they said, Roger Waters is not welcome here in Nassau County. Well, you know, these people do not speak for the actual people of Long Island, and to basically come up with this political gimmick and say that because this guy does something you object to, he is now the enemy of the people and is not welcome. It's so offensive and so ridiculous. And because of these people, because of these idiots, now we're talking about it. Now we're talking about boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, known as BDS. What is it? It's a global campaign that's attempting to increase economic and political pressure on Israel to end what it describes as violations of international law. Now, okay, how about that? We know Israel violates international law on a regular basis. Every time they build settlements in areas where they're not supposed to do that, that's violations. When they occupy lands they're not supposed to be occupying, that's violation. When they treat people like garbage and imprison the entire population, yeah, these are things that might rub others the wrong way. And so that's how movements like this get started. We've seen the same thing in South Africa. We've seen the same thing in countries all throughout the world. We've seen the same things in this country even. When states pass legislation that other states deem to be in violation of human rights, boycotts. Yeah, you stop doing business. Remember North Carolina only a couple of months ago? People were boycotting. States were boycotting North Carolina because of that stupid bathroom bill. Okay, so this is how people react. It's a peaceful way of getting your point across. And now these morons in Nassau County are saying, oh no, if you criticize Israel in any way, you're going to pay the penalty. Yeah, and this is how you know it's working, for one thing. This is how you know it's really affecting them, if they react in this crazy way. And now, more people are finding out about it because of their actions. So, you know, a lot of people compare BDS to the anti-apartheid movement and the boycotts of South Africa during the apartheid era. There's not much of a difference when you look at it in a particular way, when you see how Palestinians are being treated, how they are segregated, how they are kept on one side of a wall, how they are treated like second-class citizens, how they have their homes seized or destroyed for ridiculous reasons. You can see the parallels. You can definitely see how such a movement would come about in the first place. But, you know, the NASA politicians, they're not the only ones. They're not the only ones that that do things like this. Governor Cuomo, who I support in so many ways, but in this, he is dead wrong. He signed an executive order directing the State Office of General Services to create a list of organizations determined by the state to participate in boycott, divestment, or sanctions activity targeting Israel. Yeah, imagine that. So now, if you do this in New York State, you're considered an enemy. Here we are on a radio station that is licensed to New York State, talking about this because of those actions. So you see, when you do things like this, when you take away people's freedoms or you threaten them, the reaction many, many times is stronger than the initial action was. And so as a result of the Nassau legislature, as a result of Governor Cuomo, now we are talking about something we weren't going to be talking about before.
Yeah, it amplifies it.
It absolutely does. When you tell us we're not allowed to express ourselves in a particular way, we can't boycott something that we think is unfair, that is basically offensive, and that is something we are going to fight every single time. And that is what we are doing right now. And now, you know, because of this, I'm encouraging people, look into boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And maybe you want to be boycotting.
There's plenty of things you could divest from. That's a very popular thing in the climate area, you know, divesting from fossil fuels.
Uh-huh.
But it applies. These are tactics. These are things you can do. Also, I guess, characterize, what do you say, like talk with your wallet or something, or, you know, act locally, think
globally, yes.
Universally,
galactic. It gets worse and worse, though. It's really insane, because the Israeli lobby is so powerful that politicians live in fear of offending it, all right? And you know, if you step out and you criticize this Israeli lobby, you are labeled as anti-Semitic. In fact, that's what they're doing to Roger Waters now. They are saying he is anti-Semitic. The person I would say is least anti-Semitic, he is somebody who basically travels the world, learns about what's going on in the world, and is a critic of all kinds of injustices everywhere. And that includes the United States, that includes China, that includes Russia, that includes the UK. Basically, anybody who is a world player is open to criticism, and that includes Israel and what's going on there. So, you know, I value that kind of opinion, that kind of education, and to intimidate somebody into silence by accusing them of being anti-Semitic is simply insane. First of all, you know, the ultimate irony, a lot of people don't realize this, Palestinians are Semitic. You know, Arabs are the biggest Semitic race there is. People seem to think that that if you speak out against Israel, somehow you are anti-Jewish. And considering the amount of Jewish people who speak out against Israeli policy, that's a really strange thing to be accusing people of. But a convenient thing, because when you accuse people of being, in that definition of anti-Semitic, you get a lot of sympathy. And people say, oh my God, you know, this is like Hitler all over again. And it's a really sleazy, dishonest way of trying to get your point across. And it's something I don't think we should be falling for. Here's something that is happening in Congress, in the Senate. All right, the Israel Anti-Boycott Act, legislation introduced in the Senate by Benjamin L. Cardin, a Democrat of Maryland, and in the House by Peter J. Roskam, a Republican of Illinois. This is something that crosses party lines. It would make it a crime to support or even furnish information on a boycott directed at Israel or its businesses called by the United Nations, the European Union, or an international governmental organization. Violations will be punishable by civil and criminal penalties up to $1 million and 20 years in prison. That's what we're dealing with now. Even supporting, furnishing information about boycotting Israel, you could go to prison for this. This is wrong.
This is something.
This is a real threat. This is happening in Congress. These are the things that people are spreading around.
Wait, we have to protect the religion.
I will say right here on the state-controlled airwaves that the Israeli government, in many ways, is worse than ISIS. Yeah. I can explain why, but I'm gonna let that fester for a little bit. But I'm happy to explain why. Worse than ISIS. Worse than the Islamic State. Wow, even Kentucky is quiet. All the cars stopped. Wow. Yeah, I think they heard me down there. Okay, yeah, and I stand by that statement. I do. What are you going to do, Cuomo? What are you going to do? What are you going to do, Nassau legislature? Huh? What are you going to do?
What about the
Roger Waters can come here and play it at WUSB Studios if you won't let him play at Nassau Coliseum. Won't be able to cram as many people in here, but we support freedom of speech.
Can the Vatican levy these fines, like, you know, for if people organize
the Vatican? The Vatican is a more progressive voice than any of these people right now. That should tell you how insane this is.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. And, you know, as long as we're talking about Nassau Coliseum, you know who's playing Nassau Coliseum in December? How would you?
No.
Are you at least going to guess somebody if you're going to pretend like you know who's playing?
Bill Cosby.
Well, okay, that would be controversial, wouldn't it? No, Jay-Z.
Jay-Z, hover, hover.
I don't know what that means, but okay. So basically, Jay-Z. So that's not a problem, folks? That's not a problem? Okay.
He's the rock.
Yeah, well, speaking to Rolling Stone, let's see. Actually, hang on a second. It wasn't Rolling Stone, the reaction to this. Oh, yes, here we go. This is what Jay-Z rapped in a song called The Story of O.J. You want to know what's more important than throwing away money at a strip club? Credit. You ever wonder why Jewish people own all the property in America? This how they did it. I'm not sure how you make that rhyme.
This how they did it.
Okay, well, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't make it sound good. I'm sorry. But, yeah, you know, if you're going to worry about something remotely similar to anti-Semitism or, you know, anti-Jewish people, that sort of sounds insulting to me. I don't see any protest against Jay-Z playing. You know why? Because this is a lyric in a song. It's freedom of speech. It might be controversial, but it's something people seem to realize is protected. It's not political. But this is a whole lot more anti-Semitic than anything Roger Waters is doing, and nobody's speaking up against Jay-Z.
Is Israel arguing that Jewish American people don't? Is he arguing that they don't own property?
All
the property?
We can't get into the nuances of this. But basically, the Anti-Defamation League said they don't believe it was Jay-Z's intent to promote anti-Semitism. You know, basically defending him, attacking Roger Waters, because what Roger Waters is doing is attacking Israeli policy. Not the same thing as being anti-Jewish. Basically saying this is something that needs to be fought. And, hey, you know, this boycott, if it's pissing these people off, it's working. So, again, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, BDS movement, look into it. And the only reason we're talking about it is because these people are trying to penalize anybody who has the guts to stand up to the status quo. And
that's a formal way of protesting them.
Of course.
If anything, Jay-Z's being more, I guess, derogatory because he's making a bunch of generalizations. And calling out or using stereotypes as though they're truth, as though they can be supported somehow.
Well, we don't have time to talk about Jay-Z, but, you know, I do want to say before the crowd with the pitchforks gets here, my explanation for saying that the Israeli government is worse than ISIS in many ways, or in some ways at least, because it's systemic, okay? If you're somebody who lives under Israeli occupation, it's not going anywhere. There's no army you can summon up to get rid of it. It's going to be there tomorrow. It's going to be there next week. It's going to be there in a year. It's going to be there in 10 years. It's not going anywhere. ISIS, you can fight. ISIS, you can defeat. ISIS, you can bring in an army and get them the hell out of your neighborhood. You can't do that when you're under occupation. So in that way, yes, if you're living under Israeli occupation, it is far worse than living under ISIS because it's going to be there. It's permanent. It's normal. and it's not. It should not be accepted as normal. And that is what Roger Waters is saying, is that this is not normal. This should be fought. This should be something that people are aware of and get up and talk about and debate. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, it's not just.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
And it's for, it's permanent, and the permanence and systemic nature.
Yes. Well, Roger Waters is welcome here. Controversial thoughts are welcome here. And your letters are welcome at otw@2600.com. And now maybe let's listen to some words that might make you think and are not at all dangerous, unless you think free thinking is dangerous. Hey, we'll be back again next week, God willing. For Emmanuel and Kyle, good night.
Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop. When the wind blows, cradle will rock. Oh, baby, hate to see you fall that way. Better speak to the powers that be today. Hey, Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? You can take your revenge, but you still feel bad. There must be more to life than lucky strikes and some unlucky ones. And folded flags and pipes and drums. In the hands of the second-rate actor, pulling the high ground, exciting the stage. Oh, babe, how do these cheated stars get so far away? Will they catch what the other actors say? Hey, Joe, going with that dogma in your head. You can prove your point, but your kids will still be dead. Bring down